Dr. Alan Leica here, and I'd like to welcome you to How to Live a Fantastic Life show, where we will be discussing the important aspects of your life. We hope to inspire you to live the best life you can. Get out of your comfort zone and explore the awesome world around you. Break through your barriers. Take inspired action. Use the difficulties in your life to achieve the best version of you. Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Dr. Samantha Pillay, and she was one of four finalists in South Australia's nominated for Australian of the Year in 2022. She started her school in a wheelchair. She finished her school at age 16, and became one of the first women to train in urological surgery in South Australia. And she works mainly with the female population in that regard. And we're going to go into that in a little bit more detail in just a few minutes. She inspires others to overcome barriers to reach their goals. Just like she's become, she has overcome many goals in her life. Samantha is the author of 5 books, including the Amazon number 1 bestseller, The No Recipe Cookbook, which she wrote because she found it was very important to get her meals planned and everything else, as she is also a single parent. And the children's picture book, When I'm a Surgeon. Welcome, Samantha.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for such a lovely introduction.
Well, thank you for being here today, and thank you for spending the time. So, you know, you've been through a lot, and for a woman to get to where you are, you have had to climb a mountain of adversity. Could you address that a little bit?
That is quite a deep question in a sense, because obviously I started climbing when I was a child. Now, I couldn't physically climb, right? I mean, when I was in a wheelchair, I couldn't even, in those days, it wasn't a sort of chair I could operate as a child. I was reliant on someone to push me. So I do wonder whether having some other mountain to climb when I couldn't walk, run, or climb replaced that. It also kept me focused on goals and maybe distracted me from the here and now and what I was going through. So I've always been someone who's had to have goals that I could strive for. And having those mountains to climb, the bigger the mountain, the better.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things you had to climb was to overcome a hip disorder called congenital hip dysplasia, which is a difficult thing where your hip is not formed properly. And it usually gets picked up early in life, but yours wasn't picked up till later in life. Was that correct?
Yes. So it was both hips. And, you know, I was born in the late 60s and there was no medical ultrasound back then, believe it or not, which is how it's often picked up nowadays. And it can actually be picked up and treated early with very little consequence. But I failed to walk. So I was sort of almost 2. And as a result, the bones hadn't, and the hip joints hadn't actually formed. So back in those days, there was questions over whether I would ever walk. I had some surgery performed, I think possibly the first person in South Australia, by who became Sir Dennis Patterson after he revolutionised orthopaedic surgery for children in Australia as a result of learning a new technique, because he received a fellowship and went to the United States and brought that back. So it was more successful on one hip. I always think the one that didn't work was the one he did was his first and the one that worked might have been his second. But revision surgery was never that successful. So it meant I was quite limited growing up, you know, like I couldn't get up off the floor myself. I couldn't walk for prolonged periods. I had to, you know, in primary school, go upstairs on my bottom. And gradually, again, it was another mountain. I just kept kept on climbing, and I'm still climbing that mountain, believe it or not. By the time I was 18, I could go up stairs one at a time, but I could always had to sort of hold the handrail and pull myself up. And I was too young for a hip replacement in those days. They've obviously got better with time, and I finally had a hip replacement 5 years ago. Things got really bad before that, whereas having a shower or getting dressed was an issue, and it got to the point where I would have had to stop work. Believe it or not, I've exceeded what anyone said would happen with a hip replacement, in the sense that it was meant to stop my pain but not necessarily improve my function. And I've been climbing that mountain ever since, and now I'm actually in my 50s able to do things I've never been able to do before. So I think of myself as a good one, getting better with age.
Yeah, for sure. Well, my wife has gone through two hip replacements, so I know what you've gone through, especially when you've had to do it multiple times. So it's been a very, very difficult go. But in addition to that, I mean, you're a woman who went into medicine. In that medicine career, you became a surgeon, a urological surgeon, which in itself is difficult because that field has been a very male-dominated field over the years. How do you feel about that?
There was a certain amount of things that fell into place. Obviously, I was very driven to become a surgeon when I did medicine, and everyone said, you know, doing medicine's fine, but the last thing you should do is surgery because you need to stand. Urology has a lot of sit-down surgery and a lot of surgery that's not, you know, long hours. I could never have done, say, neurosurgery where you have to stand for 10 hours. So that influenced things. No female in South Australia had done urological surgery before, so maybe that was just an extra few feet on my mountain that I was looking for. And at that time, less than 4% of surgeons in Australia were female. I'd never even worked for a female surgical consultant or seen a woman surgeon, qualified surgeon, operate until I'd even finished my training and went to the States to do a fellowship. So I sort of became what I'd never seen, which is probably why I didn't have a lot of female role models. Why I'm so driven through my children's books to inspire that next generation. You know, you can't be what you can't see. I want to give those children that belief from an early age and that vision that possibly I didn't have. It's been an interesting journey. Obviously, once I was in urology, then I saw how, you know, urology is, as you just said, everyone's idea is that it's a male-dominated problem. It's all about prostates, et cetera. The women get forgotten. Women are 50% of the population. 60% of adult women in the US are incontinent. So the people were there. They were just underserved.
Yeah, for sure. And certainly they're underserved to a large degree. I think things are changing now, but it still is an uphill battle.
It is, believe it or not. So I've been a surgeon for 20 years, and I established a subspecialty practice called Continence Matters. So I went out on my own and started a practice, but also restricted. So I actually, from the get-go, didn't do general urology. I didn't do stones, cancers, prostates. I just specialised in incontinence. At that stage, we didn't have the figures of the prevalence. I had no idea how big a problem it was. I thought maybe that was going to help and I wouldn't have to work. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to physically work full-time. Anyway, I ended up having to work full-time and I ended up being very busy, even though I'd subspecialised. So we know it. About 60% of women don't actually seek help either, and there's a huge amount of embarrassment and stigma still on urinary incontinence. I have patients who all buy incontinence pads and hide them so that their family partners don't know about it. I have women come in for incontinence surgery and they don't tell their husbands or partners what operation they're having done still. So there's a lot of work to be done to allow women to end the stigma, because it really holds them back in life.
For sure. You know, it's again, a lot of women have that problem because of the childbearing years and giving birth to children. That part of the urinary system gets a problem as a result. And so therefore, people have that inhibition.
Yeah, it is very common. I mean, if you look at sort of young women who haven't even had kids, it's about 16% suffer with urinary incontinence. Once you get to sort of my age, over 50, it's more than 50%. So that's how common it is.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple of things. You also are a single parent. How have you been able to juggle your career and your time with your son?
Using multiple different models over the years, I had more help when he was younger. He's a teenager now with school pickups and things like that. But I've had problems, and just gradually, one by one, I've had to solve those problems. So one of the things which you alluded to before was, you know, what's for dinner was more stressful than my operating list. And I had difficulty with time. If I shopped, I was in so much pain, I couldn't even unpack the shopping, let alone stand and cook a meal. And if I cooked something, I had to make sure it was quick. So I was forced through time management and my other restraints to kind of ditch the stress of cooking and the shopping, and worked out a way to shop once a fortnight, plan a whole 2 weeks' meals from a single shop, not use a recipe, so I could cook quickly, often with one pan, adding ingredients, you know, preparing as I cook so that I could have a meal on the table within less than 20 minutes. It halved my grocery bill, it halved my food waste, I lost weight because I realised just how much there was in, when you eat out, convenience foods full of salt, sugar, fat, hidden calories, etc. And it really changed my life, and that I saw patients struggling with their weight, with their finances, with their time. That's what inspired me to write the No Recipe Cookbook. Similarly, when it came to sort of work life, I found ways that I could use my work to have quality time with my son. What on earth do I mean by that? So we'll just say, for example, if I'm giving presentations, because I was a single mum, he had to come with me conference centre after conference centre all around Australia, listen to presentations, lectures, etc. And I didn't realise, but he was absorbing it. And gradually, so when you're at home, you know, you're doing your work, I would use him to practice my presentations to. I would use him for feedback. He loved that. Now, yesterday he won the school public speaking competition and he's only 14. So you can use your work, you can have quality time. They love being involved or learning, getting them to take notes and asking them to test you if you've got to learn something. So I've written about how you can kind of use your work to create time with your kids. This idea that we have to separate work-life balance, and he's learned a lot about business and entrepreneurship, and that's what led me to write the next book, When I'm an Entrepreneur. Through engaging him with my work, it gives him skills, he feels worthwhile and involved. And so I think we can change the way we think. I've had to find solutions. I didn't have another choice. And, you know, there's ways that you can be creative to maximize your time with your children and quality time.
For sure. Now, Samantha, if you found a younger version of yourself, what advice would you give that person?
My God, I don't think I'd be able, once I started, I don't think I'd be able to stop. I think that's what happens as you mature with age. The it's an interesting thought. One of the biggest things that I would say is I didn't have, and part of that possibly through female role models, a really big vision. I didn't have those big audacious goals. I didn't have that moonshot. And so my message would be dream big, aim high, dream bigger. I know people will sort of say, oh, I've achieved a lot, but I actually think I could have potentially achieved so much more with that way of thinking. And I didn't have that way of thinking. I just was brought up that way. That wasn't the right way to think for women when I grew up. You know, if I was asked by when I was doing medicine what I wanted to do and I said I was a surgeon, I learned to qualify my answer and say, you know, I want to be a surgeon, but I don't want to have kids, because people couldn't reconcile the fact that I could want to be a surgeon and want to be a mother at the same time. And, you know, I finished school when I was 16. When I was in medical school, that was not a priority. That's not something I was thinking at. So that's actually the dedication of my children's book series, Dream Big, Aim High. You know, I'm currently working on When I'm an Astronaut. So obviously it's inspiring young girls for that moonshot to take that avenue. And I think that's the one thing that I would probably say to my younger self.
That's pretty big. So where do you go from here? You've accomplished a lot. You've done a lot. What is your next goal, and what do you want to do next?
That is very interesting. I love entrepreneurship and business. So although I've been a surgeon, I've also built from scratch and been a founder of solopreneur, business owner. And that's given me a lot of skills. I've also been doing for 20 years education, teaching and public speaking in the educational or academic sense. So I've now got all these skills that I'm using. And I think as a surgeon, to stay at the top of your game or anything that requires that level, you really need that mental acuity. And having these other areas helps with that mental acuity, because, you know, surgery might sound stressful, but you can still get into cruise control when you've been flying the same plane for 20 years. So I do need those goals. I'm taking on more public speaking. I love helping people, obviously, because that's what's driven me to do what I did as a surgeon in the first place. I'm still continuing to work and operate as a surgeon. I'm now not just changing people's lives with a scalpel, but I'm changing people's lives with a pen through writing through my website various articles to try and motivate people for health. So that's an area that I'm passionate about. And I think part of that is because, you know, I had something that I couldn't do anything about. Now, the blessing in disguise is that, therefore, I'm really conscious of those things that I can do things about. I had to learn how to keep my weight down when I couldn't exercise, wanting to eat healthy, looking at 80% of chronic disease is preventable. So the information's there. People know, you know, this causes cancer, this causes heart disease, but the doing is another thing. We've become too busy in our lives. So I really want to help people to find that mindset and resolve that conflict between no one really wants to be sick and their behaviour through, I suppose, continuing my writing, the gender barriers I had to face through the children's book series, through my public speaking to help people with other messages. So finding different ways to change people's lives, whether I'm operating on them or talking to them.
That's huge. Are there some areas in your life you're not feeling comfortable with yet that you want to develop further?
I'm lucky enough that I've made so many mistakes along the way that I'm getting there. I think, you know, you don't start off on that journey, but I've always loved self-improvement. I've loved learning new skills. I've loved doing things. I'm not afraid to have a go. And as you say, you learn from your mistakes. So I chip away one by one. You know, I haven't always I stopped drinking alcohol a couple of years ago just because I thought that it was affecting my productivity and my performance, you know, and I thought it wasn't causing a problem, but I thought I could actually be better without. And that's the question I don't think we always ask. I'm very healthy with what I eat. I try and exercise within my limitations as best I can. You know, I'm very happy with my business and my work. So I'm actually getting there. One of the things that I find is hard and I want to improve on is sleep and mindfulness. I'm one of these people that has 100 things on the go. My brain's always going. I've got a piece of paper by my bed at night. I've got a new business idea, you know, out of every experience that I come up with a new business idea. So that is an area that I want to improve on, and part of that might be drinking less coffee. That's a vice. So I think, and that's probably my next process that I'm working on to improve. The writing's been good because mindfulness is a little bit about being able to switch off, and writing allows I'm not switching off, but I'm switching off from the other things relating to my patient, thinking about my patients and thinking about my work. The other thing that's been really interesting is that, you know, I've had 20 years of public speaking. I love public speaking. Being interviewed is something really different, and that's another whole journey and skill set. Anything I do where I can learn a skill. So it's fantastic being on your podcast and being able to be interviewed. And this week I was also interviewed on television, and being interviewed on TV is a completely different exercise and learning those skills. Any skill that I can take on, bring it on.
Yeah, for sure. And I understand that. Well, Samantha, this show is called How to Live a Fantastic Life Show. How do you, Samantha Pillay, live a fantastic life?
It's something that I've gradually built, okay? I definitely didn't have everything delivered. You know, I didn't expect to have physical limitations. I didn't, you know, I've had a business for 20 years. Anyone who's owned a small business as a solopreneur for 20 years knows the course is not easy, and there's going to be ups and downs and barriers and times where you just go, oh, my God, you know, am I going to make it? Surgical training wasn't easy. Being a single mum wasn't easy. But each one of those I've actually been able to turn into something that's enriched my life. I've taken the challenge. And so, you know, life isn't fair. And everyone's going to have challenges and barriers. And if you see those as opportunities, you know, I wouldn't have had business success. I wouldn't have had the career success. I wouldn't be talking to you now. I wouldn't have written the books if I hadn't had all those problems. So having the right mindset is one thing. The second thing is looking at all the bad things in your life and realizing that they're opportunities, and doing something with them is another thing. I think key things that I've learned to realize with maturity and age is everyone has 24 hours in a day. And so your quality of life, I feel my quality of life is how I choose to spend that 24 hours. What I choose to spend my time doing determines my happiness. The second aspect is the people, right? There's people that lift you up and people that bring you down. And trying to make your life filled with as many people that are positive or bring you up, or say you've got goals of where you want to be, spending time with those people of where you want to get to will help you get there. And trying to minimize the time you have with the people that bring you down or make you unhappy impacts on the quality of your life. And sometimes them through your work or family, you might, that might be difficult. There's probably still incremental changes you can do. The other side of that is doing something to improve the quality of that relationship if you can't completely sever it or want to sever it for whatever other reason. So controlling the people that you spend your time with, controlling what you do with your time. And then the other big one is your health. And that is a huge priority. And a lot of people, they don't get that wake up call until it's too late. You know, I had a patient this week who'd smoked excessive amounts through their lifetime for decades, and, you know, presented with a bladder cancer. But they came to me because they didn't think that's what it was, and that was ended up being the diagnosis. Too late to change. Yet, you know, they knew that smoking caused cancer. It just didn't change their behaviour. Because I had something from birth, I was born with a wake-up call. So that prioritising your health, I've realised that anything I do as a surgeon pales into insignificance compared to what people can do to themselves to prevent their health. It's very easy to go to medicine to treat the problem, but preventing it in the first place, which is often can be influenced by risk factors that only the individual controls. And that's why I'm also writing sort of articles on my website to help inspire people to maybe rethink and change their behavior to prevent those problems so they don't need me.
Yeah, well, those are huge things. And I think all of us need to be aware that health is very important, that is all aspects of health, whether it's mental health and physical health. And I think those are things that many of us take for granted. You know, we're all so caught up in the achieving and the doing that we forget that we're important in that situation. And we forget that we need to take some time for ourselves in all this, because if you don't, then you're not going to get to where you want to be.
I think it's easy for people to ignore, because often these risk factors, the effects, don't materialize for decades. And that's why people ignore it. I mean, skin cancer is virtually completely preventable with sunscreen, but no one bothers, you know. And I think the state that in the US, your rates are about a quarter of people will develop skin cancer. It's by the time they're 70, I think. Australia at 70% because we've got more sun, and it's yet a completely preventable disease. But obviously there's all the smoking and other cancer forming, you know, alcohol and that can cause chronic disease. So it's easy to ignore when they don't materialize for decades.
For sure. So Samantha, we're already at our end already. It's time has flown by as I promised it would. Now, can you tell people how they can get in touch with you and how they can get copies of your books?
Sure. So the easiest way to get in touch with me would be to go to my website, which is just my name, Samantha Pillay, or one word, that's PILLAY.com. And through there, people can connect my social media links, whether LinkedIn, connect with me, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So they're all on that. There's also information about my books. And if they want to sign up, I don't send out a lot of newsletters. So maybe two a year. I'm kind of busy. Usually when I release a book, so when I'm an astronaut, it's going to be released, I will send out a newsletter then. Through the books are all available online. So Amazon, Booktopia, Barnes & Noble's, virtually all online retailers. You can buy the books either in hardcover, the children's books, paperback as well, and ebook.
Perfect. Thank you, Samantha, for spending this time with us. It really was a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and also your inspiration for others.
Thank you, Alan. It's been fantastic to be on your show. Time flew and it was a lovely chat.
Okay, bye for now. Have a fantastic day.
Bye, Alan. Have a fantastic life.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here and thank you for spending this time with us. If you like the show, please check back often because we have a lot of interesting guests. Bye for now. Have a fantastic day. Hope to talk to you soon.
You've been listening to How to Live a Fantastic Life. Be sure and pick up a copy of Dr. Leica's book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, on Amazon.com. And you'll want to subscribe right here on this page so you don't miss a single episode. Have a fantastic day.